Hey, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast, The Towel and the Basin. I'm Jamie Dew, president of the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary and Level College. And always just grateful to have you here with us. I hope that this podcast is helpful for you. I certainly hope that this semester, as we're talking about these, what we've called heads of doctrine, I hope that that's been helpful for you, because our desire here is just to really help you think maybe a next step about your faith. To really not be intimidated by the discussions in theology that theologians and scholars have. So we've talked about a lot of things in this podcast, in this series, this season of episodes that we've got here. And we've talked about these heads of doctrine, you know, Christology, pneumatology, and all those types of things. Today, we are actually talking about the doctrine of man, or what we sometimes refer to as anthropology, or even theological anthropology. And the guest we have today to talk about that is actually, it's me. This is an area of my work that I've spent a lot of time over the last, well, I guess really the second half of my career, and passionate about this type of thing. But I'm not just going to blather on. To help me sort of facilitate that discussion today, I got my normal podcast partner with me, Joe Fontenot. Joe, what's up, man?
Hey, man. It's good to be on here with you.
Yeah, man.
Good to talk through this with you. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, man.
So we're talking about the doctrine of humanity. And you alluded to this already. You said the word anthropology.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are going to hear anthropology and think, wait a minute, is that like a biblical thing? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So anthropology is a word, comes from anthropos, which man, and then ology, obviously study of, so study of man. And to your point, you're absolutely right. Anthropology is studied by, honestly, various disciplines. There's a sense in which all of modern medicine is anthropology, right? Mm. Because they're studying the physical aspect of man, and they're really trying to understand that. Sociologists, a sort of a related discipline to sociology, and that's probably what most people hear when they hear the phrase or the word anthropology. Yeah. They might think of something of that nature, right? And so here, you're really drawing on a lot of cultural and sociological insights and such to really understand. You're in anthropology, and those in the social sciences, you're generally dealing with, you know, like cultures and customs and people groups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about in this episode,
okay,
in our series and season that we're doing. When we talk about anthropology here, I probably should, you know, just lean on the language, as I mentioned a minute ago, of theological anthropology. Mm. So what we mean by this is, well, what do we believe, theologically speaking, about human beings? You can't really have a real robust theology without talking about the creature that God puts at kind of the pinnacle of everything. Mm-hmm. He did not say about any of these other enormously wonderful magnitude things like rocks, planets, stars, galaxies, universes, and such. He didn't say about any of those big, beautiful, complex things what he said about us. Mm. And so he has very particular things to say about us, and it has deep, deep, deep implications for who we are, what we do, and ultimately where this is all going. And so in theology, that's what we call theological anthropology.
I got you. Okay, so this makes sense. This kind of frames it. Maybe can you sort of nail down some of those tent pegs, and like, what are some of the basic things when we're looking at theological anthropology that we would affirm as Christians, as scholars?
Yeah. So, every theologian may have different lists that they would give, but I think the big ones that would be in any discussion are going to be, I'd say, three things. In theological anthropology, you're going to talk about man as a creation of God, as opposed to some kind of product of evolution, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, granted, you do have some theologians in contemporary theology that will be far more favorable towards evolutionary views than I would want to be. In short, historically speaking, what Christianity says about human people is that we were a direct creation of God on the sixth day of creation. And, you know, he takes the dust of the ground, And again, some theologians will read that as only metaphorical or something like that, but took the dust of the ground, shaped it, blew into its nostrils the breath of life, and Adam becomes a living soul. And then the rib from Adam to make the woman. And so now, as we talk about direct creation, it's important, I think, to register that we are made by God. We are not some kind of evolutionary product at the long end of things over billions of years and so. Mm-hmm. But the biggest, I think, concern in that affirmation that theologians have wanted to make over the last 2,000 years is that as those direct creations that he says in the next point I'll talk about is Imago Dei, as those beings made like that, that means he is our Lord, we are from him, and we are for him, meaning we come from him directly. Our existence, our very being and our very essence existence has a dignity, a worth, a value in its own right because we were made by God. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, our creaturely nature also gives us a humility, right? Mm-hmm. None of us are kings or lords or any of those things. We are all bowing before mm-hmm. our maker. So we're from him and we're for him. Mm. Meaning he didn't just create me to let me just go live my life and do whatever I wanted to do and chase my wild dreams and all that stuff. No, I exist for him in some way. My very life came from him and my very life is for him in some way. So our creaturely nature, I think it dictates all those types of things. So one, direct creation. Two, Imago Dei, the image of God. This is the thing I alluded to earlier. Man, universes are big and beautiful and powerful and complex, and oceans and mountains, and man, creation is gorgeous in so many ways, and awe-inspiring, takes our breath away. Mm-hmm. And there are other creatures out there, like, you know, dogs and dolphins and just mm-hmm. cool creatures. And yet God does not say about any of those other things what he says about you, Joe, mm-hmm. Any of our listeners, he says about us and not those other things. Mm-hmm. We are made in his image. And wow, that's pregnant with mm-hmm. meaning and purpose. And then the last thing I'd say here, and we can unpack these latter two. I've already said some things about creation, but this last one I'd say is the Bible has things to say about our constitution, mm-hmm. what it is we're made out of, right? It's clearly we have bodies, right? Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't want to think as creatures of a creator that is perfect in power and perfect in wisdom and perfect in knowledge that our embodiment is unimportant or mm-hmm. accidental or mm-hmm. coincidental or something like that. No. Surely a God perfect in knowledge, perfect in wisdom, perfect in goodness, and perfect in power, if he made us this way, then he intends us to be embodied. Mm-hmm. But very clearly also in the scriptures, it talks about these things called souls and spirit and things like that. There's more to us than merely physicality. So in short, I mean, again, other theologians may say things differently, but if you want to, what does Christianity say about human people? Well, direct creation of God, two, image bearers, and three, body, soul. So,
okay. This is helpful. I kind of want to jump into each of these a little bit more. So let's start with the image bearer, the Imago Dei. Okay. There are so many ways to understand this. Can you help me just give me some handles or some general broad ruts to swim in to mix all my metaphors together right there to understand Imago Dei a little better?
Yeah, sure. Again, pick up any systematic theology and historically or contemporary, and you will find every theologian may nuance this in a little bit different ways. And some of and they're going to be more than just these two big views that I'd put up in front of you. But at least a really, really good conversation starter mm-hmm. would be to say that there's roughly two big kinds of families of views here about this thing called the Imago Dei. One of those, probably the most common and probably the most widely held today, is what we would call a substantive view of the Imago Dei. And what this family of views is going to say is that ultimately the image of God refers to some kind of substance that I am, or some essence that I hold and that you hold. There's an essence or a nature that I have and that you have that is unlike any other thing in creation, including the dolphin. I mentioned the dolphin twice now because if you know anything about dolphins, they're brilliant. Yeah. And they're very personable, right? Yeah. I mean, my wife always gets embarrassed when I point this out. Dolphins, for instance, have sex 11 times a day just because they like it, right? Wow. I mean, they're very personal, very relational. Dogs are, you know, these creatures. I love dogs because, you know, they're not just these little robotic instinct followers. They have their instincts and they do that. They're deeply relational beings,
yeah,
right? And so that's just cool. But God doesn't say about that what he says about us. He refers to us as having a particular nature or substance. There's yeah. something that it is to be yeah. an image bearer of God. And generally speaking, theologians, when they try to unpack, well, what is that essence or that nature, they'll say things that typically refer to rational capabilities. Okay. We have a particular nature or substance or essence that comes with rational capabilities that to give us the ability to commune with God. Hmm. It's not just that we're really smart and we can do math and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's that these cognitive powers that we have are unique against the backdrop of all the rest of creation, mm-hmm. giving us then the ability to do communion with God. And then we therefore commune with God. And we're to be worshipers, right? So substantive views are one.
Okay.
Another one is what we call relational views. There's relational views. You see this specifically coming out of Reformed tradition a lot. John Calvin talked about this type of thing a lot, and some other theologians in that tradition. And the relational views basically say, no, the imago Dei is grounded not in some essence that all human beings have, mm-hmm. but rather the image, the imago Dei, is grounded in it's born in a relationship that you have to God. So mm-hmm. Adam and Eve in the garden, innocent, had a relationship with God. That relationship was broken in the fall, and it is restored through salvation in Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. So what that would mean in the sort of more, I don't want to say extreme versions of this, but in the fully developed sense of this view, mm-hmm. what that would mean is that you are an image bearer if you're in relationship with God through Jesus. And so lost people, for example, some folks in this that hold this view might say lost people are not image bearers. Mm. And so
part of the new creation. I got you. So kind of that new creation that Paul talks about in the New Testament and all this sort of thing, the yeah. relational view would say that part of, or some of them in this tradition would say the imago Dei happens when you become that new creation, potentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, historically, across time, there's kind of been like this on-off thing going on, right? Adam and yeah. Eve was there. It's in the fall. And Calvin, by the way, I've mentioned this in a couple of different lectures over my career, and some students will say, well, wait a minute, I read Calvin's Institutes. He doesn't talk about that. Go read his commentary on Genesis 1. That's mm-hmm. where he'll unpack this type of idea. But that in the fall, the image was lost, and then it gets restored again there. So, but anyway, there are other views, but these are two big examples of what people have said.
Okay. Before we move on, tell me some other things that are related to this image bearing. And by other things, I mean other kind of concepts that stretch out that were maybe ethical issues that we're dealing with today or just...
Yeah. Yeah. So again, a lot of the discussion on Imago Dei tends to revolve around these rational capabilities because, again, most folks will tend towards the substantive views. Or if you're in that kind of Reformed tradition, you might go towards these relational views and hold that. But there are some other very interesting, I guess you could say, realities, capacities, features, and properties that we have that seem to be directly tied to this image bearing. Mm. One, notice in Genesis 1, this is just interesting, and I'm not saying I want to do a whole lot with this. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how to flesh this out, but, you know, in the image of God, he made them. And then the very next thing it says is male and female, he made them. Mm. So something about male and female there to adequately express the imago Dei in humanity requires both male and female. And one of the things we can say about that is, well, now male and female are what we would say is ontologically equal, right? Mm. I'm not more of an image bearer than my wife or my daughters, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not more of an image bearer than me and my sons. Mm-hmm. You know, we together, male and female, reflect the Imago Dei equally in that way. And that, boy, the dignity of that, the worth of that to both male and female. And by the way, think about how that speaks to our cultural moment, where gender is supposed to be this fluid thing or constructed thing, not according to God. Mm-hmm. There's male and female, and there's a dignity and a worth in that itself. So male and female is one thing that's deeply connected to this. Moral capacity is one of these. Mm-hmm. Sometimes theologians will tie that in with those rational capacities. You and I are what we call moral agents. Mm-hmm. Agents are beings that perform moral actions of some sort with choice of various kinds. And obviously that's a big debate right there. But moral agency is one of these things, I think, that's grounded in image of God. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that leads us to a next one of worship, mm-hmm. right? I'm given this moral capacity so that I can direct my obedience and my devotion and everything to the one who made me. Remember, I'm from him and I'm also for him. And so moral capacity is one of those types of things, and then worship. Now, I will just maybe to try to tie these together, because a lot of times my students want to know what I hold about. Are you a substantivist or a relationalist or something like that? And by the way, I should note, if any of my theology buddies out there are listening to this podcast, I doubt they are, because they got better things to do than hear me talk about this. Look, I know that you know a lot more about these topics than I do, and that's all well and good. I'm just trying to let some basic categories out there for our people.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Look, I think that this worship component, we are made to worship God. I mean, you pick that up. There's already this sense of sort of reflecting God in the created order that we see there. We also see this in Deuteronomy chapter 6. We're made to reflect him in some way. But notice here now how worship really, I think, in some ways brings something from both the substantive and the relational aspects into this discussion and brings them together and ties them together in a way. I can't worship him if I'm not a certain kind of thing. That speaks to substance or essence or nature. But at the same time, worship is a relational thing. Mm-hmm. That's the very thing mm-hmm. I exist to do. Mm-hmm. And so all these things are connected in some way. I don't know exactly how or where somebody's supposed to parse that out and land, but I think all this stuff's connected. Oh, and I didn't mention creativity. Little C creators, right? Mm-hmm. I like to point this out. God's big C creator. He mm-hmm. creates ex nihilo out of nothing. There's mm-hmm. no existing matter, material, or anything that he shapes and fashions. He speaks and brings it all into existence. You and I cannot do that. Mm. Therefore, we're not big C creators. But we are little C creators. God put Adam in the garden to cultivate it, which to mm-hmm. me, bring forth from the garden stuff that's not there yet. Mm-hmm. Right now, we bring forth from the garden stuff that's not there yet by taking the stuff he made and combining it and mixing it and cultivating it and tending it and all that stuff. But it's not just gardening and farming we do that with. I mean, think about poetry, think about art, mm-hmm. think about music, think about MacBook computers, think about space shuttles, think about technology and surgeries. I mean, look at anything that man has quote unquote made. It's a little M made, and mm-hmm. we are little C creators, but this is something that animals don't do. This is something that planets don't do. This is something that mountains and oceans don't do. Human beings are little C creators. We take the stuff that's already there and we make new things. And I think in some way that reflects the creator we're supposed to be, image bearing. That's part of it.
No, that's helpful. So you mentioned, we're talking about this doctrine of humanity, this theological anthropology, if you will, and you kind of broke that down into three different categories, right? So there's the direct creation of God, which you've been talking about all throughout. There's the Imago Dei, which the last few questions that we've sort of been batting back and forth have been directly addressing that. But then you mentioned this other thing that I just want to know kind of what are you talking about when you say this? The third little handle that you gave me there was body and soul. So just tell me more about this. How does this play into all that?
Yeah. So Christianity And here, look, just to be honest, what I'm about to say is going to fly against a lot of contemporary theologians. Mm. I'm sorry. Look, I think the Bible is very clear that we have a dualistic composition or constitution. What I mean by that is there is a body very clearly, right? Here it is.
Sure.
And I have heart and lungs and all those things. There's a physicality. And as I said earlier, we shouldn't think that that's just mere coincidence that we ended up this way. Surely a God that's perfect in knowledge and wisdom and such, if he made us this way, it's because he intends for us to be this way. He went through a lot of trouble to create the physical aspects of who we are. Oh, and by the way, eschatologically, he's going to go through a whole lot of trouble yet again to restore all of that stuff in the eschaton and in bodily resurrection. I mean, look, these bodies are coming back at some point. So our physicality, our embodiment is huge. And theologians, contemporary theologians that talk about that, I think are right to point to the magnitude and the importance of our physicality and our embodiment. However, a lot of contemporary theologians want to just, you know, badmouth all over any kind of dualism because I guess they hear Platonism, they hear Cartesianism and all these things, what we call substance dualism, which is a soul that's a substance and a body that's a substance and stuff like that. And a lot of contemporary theologians don't like that at all. Mm. And I should clarify, I don't hold that exact view. But again, to the chagrin of a lot of my contemporary theologians, look, they convinced me years ago of some kind of holistic account that persons are bodies and souls. Yeah. And so I started digging through a lot of contemporary theologians. And what I found was they will not all of them, but many of them, most of them, will unpack these very robust, holistic theologies of human persons, body and soul together is one thing. And then at death, when they talk about what happens to human beings eschatologically, it all collapses back down into the very view they hate so much, which is the view that says you are your soul, you're not a body. And you can't have it both ways, man. You can't have it both ways. At the end of the day, I understand many contemporary theologians don't like substance dualism. Be that as it may, here's the way the Bible talks. You have a body and you have a spirit or soul, however you want to call it. And yes, I know there are what we call trichotomists, thinks that body, soul, and spirit are three distinct things. Dichotomists say, no, soul and spirit are just synonyms for each other. You can use them interchangeably. And so there's just two things, body and soul. But I think that's what Christianity says. We see it right there in Genesis chapter 2. We see it in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We see it all over the place in the Psalms. And we see it all over the place in the New Testament. There's a soul or spirit, whatever you want to call it, which is not a physical thing. And there's a body that is a physical thing. Now, I think that's the basic material. And then historically, there have been three big families of views. We have what we call materialism, which is very popular today in theology, believe it or not. It was very popular in the sciences. It's been very popular in modern philosophy. And it's surprisingly to me, very popular in a lot of Christian theology today. I don't hold this view. I don't think that's right. But materialism says there's no soul, there's no spirit, it's just a body. That's it, a living body. You have what we call substance dualism, which says, this is Plato, this is Descartes, and then there's a bunch of Christian theology that's taken this view and kind of developed it in unique Christian ways. And I will want to be honorable here. I think they've tried very carefully and genuinely to make it genuinely Christian in this ways. Mm-hmm. But this view says you have a body is one substance and a soul is a different substance, okay? But watch this. The person is the soul. Okay, so a person is the soul, they have a body. Another view, a third view, this is the view I would lean towards. This view says there is, in fact, a body and the soul. It wouldn't call those each individual things substances in their own right. A body and a soul, each of those are real things. One's physical, one's not, but that the person is the combination of those two things together, body and soul. And I actually would say that throughout the vast majority of Christian history, Christianity said something just like that. Mm-hmm. Thomas Aquinas holds this view. Many of the medievals hold this view. A lot of early church folks hold this view. More last couple hundred years, the substance dualism has been a little bit bigger. But today, this view what we call hylomorphism is kind of making a big old comeback right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the view I would lean towards, because I do think that we have bodies and souls. Absolutely. But I think I am the combination of both of those things, which explains a lot. If you cracked me across the head with a frying pan and did physical damage to my brain, notice that it wouldn't be just my brain and my physical appearance that would change. I would change. Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of change in mm-hmm. my dispositions and personalities. And so mm-hmm. anyway,
that's interesting.
Yeah, there's tons to talk about there.
Yeah, there's tons to talk about. I'm holding myself back because we would have to change this podcast to a different name. Yeah. But this is very interesting. Maybe we do one follow up on that later or something.
Cool.
Well, this is great. This is awesome. Thanks for walking through all that, Jamie. That's very helpful.
Yeah, man. See you next time.
All right.
Hey, everybody. This is Jamie and Joe again. If you like this podcast, would you leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts? That helps other people find it.
And if you have any questions, we'd love to hear about them. Just go to jamiedew.com/questions and send them in that way. And we'll take a look at the most frequently asked questions and give them a shot.